So today we are going to discuss about how to avoid Vaishnava Aparad, how to avoid committing Vaishnava Aparad, and if we do commit Vaishnava Aparad, then what we should do, and how to speak to devotees and speak about them. Actually, this is one of the most important considerations for a Vaishnava. Actually, Vaishnava Aparad are very, very dangerous. Actually, we are concerned about the Naam Aparad. We have taken shelter of the holy name, and unless and until we become free from the offenses, we do not receive the mercy of the holy name. In the age of Kali, Krishna has appeared in the form of his holy name, and the holy name is our only shelter. Actually, in this age, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the holy name of Krishna, is the only shelter. There is no other way, no other way, no other way. Now, as long as we commit offenses to the holy name, we do not receive the mercy of the holy name. So it's very important to become free from the offenses to the holy name. And of the 10 offenses to the holy name, what's the first one, Narottam Prabhu? Yeah, right. So first offense is actually Vaishnava Aparad. So we have been warned, the first thing that we have been warned about is not to commit Vaishnava Aparad. So as devotees, we must be very, very careful not to commit Vaishnava Aparad. And here is a quote from Srila Prabhupada's letter to Shivananda Prabhu. In Krishna consciousness, every man is so important because all of the activities of a devotee of Lord Krishna is beneficial to all living entities. Prabhupada is emphasizing that every single devotee in Krishna consciousness movement is very, very important. And no matter how insignificant his service may be, in the eyes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is a very, very special person. Whoever is helping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Sankirtan movement is very dear to Krishna. We can understand that Krishna is so merciful that he is always taking care of all the living entities. He is always very, very concerned about every single living entity. He is providing for them, he is protecting for them. He is so concerned. He is the Supreme Father and every living entity is his child. So as a father takes care of his child, as a father is concerned about his child, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is concerned about every living entity the same way. And then what to talk about those living entities who are directly helping him spread Krishna consciousness in this world. Those who are directly helping him in his movement, Sankirtan movement. So we should not think that Vaishnava Aparad means only committing offenses to the advanced devotees, and there is no offense when we hurt or insult or blaspheme less important devotees. So it's very important that we must be careful not to commit offense to anyone. So there are a few quotes from Hari Bhakti Vilas. Devotees of Hari are very rare in the age of Kali. The position of the devotee is more elevated than the position of Lord Brahma and Lord Rudra. So, point two, the presence of a devotee at the time of death elevates even the killer of a brahmana to the spiritual sky. Yes.
At that first point, Maharaj, just there's even more elevated position of Lord Rudra. But I was under the impression that Lord Shiva was the topmost Vaishnava.
Yeah, relatively speaking. You see, but the devotees, those who are in Vaikuntha, they are more elevated than Lord Shiva. The devotees, those who are in Ayodhya, they are more elevated than the devotees in Vaikuntha. And finally, the devotees of Vrindavan and Navadvip, they are in the highest platform. But here, they are talking about the pure devotees. According to their situation, Lord Shiva's position is below Vaikuntha. Goloko namni nijo dhamni talecha tasya devi mahesho hori dhamu shuteshu teshu. Below Goloka Vrindavan is Devi Dham, the earth, the universe. Then above the material universe or material nature is the abode of Lord Shiva. Then above the abode of Lord Shiva is Vaikuntha. And then above and the higher region of Vaikuntha is Ayodhya. Then higher than Ayodhya is Dwarka. Higher than Dwarka is Mathura. And higher than Mathura is Vrindavan.
Can we compare with Lord Shiva, who is in the different category and his identity as Rudra Tattva? How can we compare him to other living entities in this respect? Because he is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to Shastra.
Yes, he is a Rudra Tattva, but a pure devotee's position is higher than the Rudra Tattva. Rudra has some contact with the material nature, whereas a pure devotee doesn't have any contact whatsoever with the material nature. Yes, Maharaj?
Does also pure devotees interacting personally with Krishna in his most transcendental pastimes?
Right.
Is there does Rudra do that in any form?
Lord Shiva finally gets entry into Vrindavan, in the Rasa Dance, or in Vrindavan pastimes of Krishna, as Gopeshwar Shiva. And Lord Shiva also guards, and as Gopeshwar Shiva, he's guarding the Rasa Mandal.
But there's a difference between one who guards and one who joins Krishna, isn't it?
He becomes a gopi, yeah. Finally, then from there, he becomes. Because unless one becomes a gopi, one cannot enter into the Rasa Dance. Yes,
Vaishnavanam,
right. That's what Kalavinka Prabhu asked.
So he's only referring to the devotees within this material world?
Relatively speaking, that Lord Shiva's position is very elevated. Vaishnavanam, Yatha Sambhu. He's a Mahajan. He's an exemplary devotee. No doubt about that. Who can be like Lord Shiva? Like, in spite of being practically the controller of the entire material creation, he is completely renounced. He is the husband of Mahamaya, the controller of the material nature. But he himself is totally renounced. The presence of a devotee at the time of death elevates even the killer of a brahmana to the spiritual sky. So that actually reminds us of the importance of being in the association of devotees. We do not know when death will come. We may die any moment. But if we die in the presence of devotees, then Jamadutas won't be able to come. And we'll be forced, we'll be helped to go back to Godhead. And we can consider how wonderful it is to die in the presence of a devotee. Like if we are surrounded by devotees at the time of death, then the devotees will chant the holy name, the devotees will put Charanamrita on our mouth, the devotees will play Srila Prabhupada's tapes so that we can listen to and meditate upon Srila Prabhupada. So just the presence of a devotee will help us go back to the spiritual sky. Point 3, if a dog eater becomes a Vaishnava, then he becomes more elevated than a Brahman, And if a sannyasi is devoid of devotion to Vishnu, then he is considered to be more degraded than a dog eater. Point 5. Those who worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, are the best of all people, and no one is better than them in three worlds. Those sinless, magnanimous Vaishnavas purify the entire creation. Therefore, they are even better than the places of pilgrimage. So, this is how we can see the position of a devotee. And so we must be very, very careful not to commit any offense to the devotees. Because when you commit offense to the devotees, then our spiritual progress becomes completely stifled. One can never, it has been described in Haribhakti Vilas again, that if one commits Vaishnava Aparad, then his way back to the door to Vaikuntha becomes closed for him forever. So that's why we always should be very, very careful not to commit any offense. And if we commit any offense at all, then we must beg forgiveness. The moment we realize that we have committed some offense to a Vaishnava, we must. So now it has been described that how one should rectify Vaishnava Aparada. It has been described that one cannot become free from Vaishnava Aparada. Nothing can actually free one from Vaishnava Aparada. It is only the Vaishnava himself that can free him from that offense. The example is Durvasa's offense to Ambarish Maharaj. Durvasa Muni even went to Hari, Vishnu himself. But Vishnu said, I can't do it. He said, only if Ambarish Maharaj, who is a great devotee, if he forgives you from the offense, then only you can be free from the offense, not otherwise. There is no way you can become free from the offense. So, the only way we can become free from Vaishnava Aparada is just by approaching the Vaishnava where he committed the offense. And in Harinam Chintamani it has been described that a Vaishnava, as soon as somebody comes and begs forgiveness from him, then his natural reaction is that no, there is no offense. You never committed any offense, and he will embrace him and forgive him immediately. So this is how elevated a Vaishnava is. His heart is very, very pure, and there is no room for lust, greed, anger, etc. in his heart. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Amogha, he was Sarvabhum Bhattacharya's son-in-law, he offended Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking prasad, and Sarvabhum Bhattacharya, with great love and affection, he was feeding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Many, many preparations, and there was a pile of prasad on his plate, and he was forcing him to eat. And then Amogha came there and he saw, and his immediate reaction was, how come a sannyasi eats like that? And Sarvabhum Bhattacharya became so angry, he picked up a stick and he chased Amogha. And Amogha ran away. And he was very, very hurt, Sarvabhum Bhattacharya. And he started cursing him, said that, let him die. Let my daughter become a widow. And then the next day, Amogha got cholera. And he was dying. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got that news, he himself went to Amogha. And he said, Ottanto nirmal ei brahman hridaye. You're a Brahmin. And a Brahmin's heart is naturally very clear, very clean. But why did you allow this chandala called envy enter into your heart? So envy has been compared to a chandala. So a devotee's heart is very clean, and there shouldn't this impure personalities like chandalas should not enter there. So And that is very, very obvious when we encounter with a devotee. We see how magnanimous, how generous, how merciful, how compassionate, and how friendly he is to everyone. So no one is there who can actually be envious or offensive to a Vaishnava in its proper consciousness. Yes, Maharaj?
Just like with Nama Parvaz, yeah, one of the offenses was committing sin in the strength of chanting.
Yeah.
Thinking, fine, committed sin is okay, but it will be redeemed by chanting. So how, you want to describe how that applies also to this Vaishnava pride? If I commit an offense to Vaishnava, all I have to do is go beg it forgiven, still be forgiven for these Vaishnavas, and I'll help with that. In other words, to what degree must there be sincerity in begging the Vaishnava forgiveness, given the Vaishnava is already forgiven?
Yeah. You see, now the seventh offense is to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. And that is thinking that I'll commit sinful activities, but since the holy name purifies everything, then I will get purified from the reactions of those sins. Whereas here the Vaishnava Parad also should not deliberately commit offenses to a Vaishnava. It should be, I mean, if at all there is some offense, then the only way to become free from that offense is by approaching a Vaishnava. That's the point that I was trying to make. There is no other way actually. But that doesn't mean that we should think that, well, let's keep on committing Vaishnava aparadhas and then we'll go to the Vaishnava and say, please forgive me for my offenses, Prabhu. That shouldn't be the practice. That shouldn't become the practice. One should try.
It will not work.
Well, it will. Vaishnava, as I said, is always very, very merciful. You keep committing offenses to a Vaishnava and Vaishnava will forgive you. But Krishna may not forgive you. Krishna may not forgive you. Yes, Maharaj.
In our society, and we're dealing with Vaishnavas, but our conditioning is, you know, very, very strong from another culture. So, what will you do in a case where someone becomes very offended by something you did, but actually you didn't do anything, but you know, he thinks you've done something, and like in a case like that, do you go along with what he says and say, yes, I've done something wrong? And he may not be able to understand that you haven't done anything wrong. That's one case. Let me just ask the other question. The other question is what happens when a Vaishnava won't forgive you? Now, if someone actually may be a Vaishnava, but due to his conditioning, he gets very, you know, insulted and hurt. You know, he's a Vaishnava, but he won't forgive you. These two cases.
Yes. So the first one, if somebody becomes offended for no rhyme or reason, right? And if a person gets to know that he has become offended due to some misunderstanding, it's always better to clear out that misunderstanding. So it's always better to have clear out all misunderstandings. And it is very important in a Goshtiyanandi Sampradaya like ours, where we have to constantly be in the association of devotees. We're surrounded by devotees, we have to work with them. So it is important that we clarify all misunderstandings and disagreements, misconceptions. Now, the second one is not quite like a Vaishnava. You see, if somebody comes and begs forgiveness, and he tells, and this so-called Vaishnava says, that I'll never forgive you. That is not a Vaishnava. On the other hand, from Haribhakti Vilas, Harinam Chintamani, very clearly it has been mentioned that a Vaishnava will immediately embrace him and say that no, there is no offense. So, So we have to understand that these are very neophyte dealings. And then another point to that is that it is not that the Vaishnava takes the offense. The main thing is actually Krishna takes the offense. Yes, ma'am.
Another point is that the severity of the offense is determined by the advancement of the Vaishnava.
Right.
The severity of the offense depends upon the advancement of the Vaishnava offending. If you offend a Vaishnava of the highest category, that is the
most
severe offense of all. Elephant.
Yes, Purnacharya.
In a case where the devotee may forgive the offender, but then the Lord does not forgive that person?
The Lord will forgive the person when he sees that the person who offended, he is sincerely lamenting. And the person who he offended, he very openly forgave him. But if a person makes, if it becomes one's habit to commit offenses deliberately and thinking that, well, I'll commit offenses and beg forgiveness and that's how I'll become free. After all, Krishna knows everybody's heart. Sitting in our hearts, he knows what's going on there. So we can't fool him. So we must be very, very careful about that. Yes, Maharaj.
Can you make a distinction for us between criticism for the purpose of not only for the purpose of instruction, but for the purpose there's genuine need for just criticism as opposed to offensive behavior.
Right, right. That is not actually offensive, because point out somebody's defect is like being a teacher. That's not actually an offense. So, positive criticism or point out somebody's defects to rectify him, and especially or protect the society or protect, So that is not considered to be an offense. Yes.
It was in regards to the point that was made in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There are two points. One where this devotee saw some mistake in the worship of Lord Jagannath. And Lord Jagannath came at night and chastised him for noticing that defect. And also we see there's an example of a devotee. They were bringing in the offering for the deity and he touched with his head the roof, and so the devotee ordered all the offering to be done again. Another example?
Touch the roof?
He said that the ceiling, when he was going through the door, and the devotee ordered the offering to be done all again.
Because many people came through, and the dust from the feet went up. And
I don't know the names exactly, but both examples are.
Yeah, so, what's your question?
So, the question is that in one, we see that the devotee is noticing some mistake being done, and Lord Jaya is chastising him for noticing the mistake. Should we notice the mistake? And that story we see that becomes extremely noticeable. And all the notice.
In the first case, it was a maryada langhan, transgression of etiquette. You see, it was Pundarik Vidyanidhi who felt that the pujari should put some contaminated cloth on Lord Jagannath. It's called Madhuva Vastra. Madhuva Vastra is starched cloth. Now on certain day, Lord Jagannath wears that. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi could not tolerate that. So he criticized. And so that night, Jagannath and Baladev came and chastised him. So here, the thing is, understanding is that the position of the direct servitors of Lord Jagannath is very, very elevated. And Lord Jagannath did not tolerate any criticism of that, because a less advanced devotee cannot criticize more advanced devotee. And here also another understanding is that Lord Jagannath is directly taking their service. So they are not doing it out of their whims, or they are not doing it whimsically. Because Lord Jagannath wants it, that's why they put it on. So that's why Lord Jagannath came and chastised. But the other one was there is some contamination. Some offering was contaminated, so it was asked to offer it again, be offered again.
How that would apply, noticing the effects in the worship nowadays, in the present society, there were times we noticed some effects being done during the worship of the deity. So what's the position of the devotee?
We should try to maintain a very high standard. But then again, you see, we cannot really follow such strict bhakti or very high standard of worship in this age. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us Sankirtan. Our principal business is Sankirtan. Yes.
Can you explain what actually does constitute an offense to Vaishnava?
Hurting a Vaishnava. If we hurt a Vaishnava, often we notice that some devotees become offensive to some other Vaishnava and then they become sick. So this is actually the reaction of that Vaishnava Parada. So deliberately we should not hurt or blaspheme. Blasphemy is another... Actually blasphemy is the main consideration, to talk bad about someone. There are some considerations that if one beats a Vaishnava, if one talks ill about a Vaishnava, then it is very, very bad. So any other comments or... Anandamayi?
I was going to bring this point of this instance in Mahabharata where Karna commits an offense to Parashara.
Who?
Karna. He was the... Parashara was sleeping in the lap of... Parashara was sleeping...
Dronacharya.
No.
Oh,
Karna. Karna. And then he was bitten by this...
Right.
Woman.
Yeah.
But Karna, although Karna pleaded forgiveness to Parashuram did not. Yeah, he did not forgive him at all. In fact, he cursed him.
Right.
He cursed him. So, can that be said, like, he was, like, Vasudeva Prabhu was saying that in order to teach him a lesson?
Right.
That,
right.
We can think that the Parashuram is actually a personality of God himself. So, he's definitely. Although it is said that he worships Lord Shiva, he has sent Lord Shiva his spiritual master.
Yeah. So here he is teaching a lesson, or he is citing an example for the posterity, for the people of the future generation, that we cannot cheat a guru. One should never cheat his guru. One should never lie to his guru. Because that is an unforgivable offense. So that is what that's the example he's citing through that pastime. Yes, Maharaj?
It's a nice thing, it's not a good example, it's an example, but it's not very nice, of an offense that happened when Prabhupada was here with us in, I think it was 1972. We had just started the temple construction here at Krishna Balam Temple. Well, there was no temple. It was just Prabhupada's little place that he was living. So Subal Swami, one of our sannyasis at the time, he was in charge for a while. And there was a bhakta who was living in the ashram when he was in charge. And this bhakta would not get up in the mornings. He was the Vrijvasi, the bhakta. So one morning, Subal Swami took a bucket of water and threw it on the bhakta to wake him up. So the bhakta became very insulted, and he got up and he left the ashram and went back to his father. So when this news was brought to Prabhupada, he became very angry at Subal Swami. And he told him that you have to find out his bhakta now, and you have to offer your obeisances and beg his forgiveness. So Subal Swami did it. And actually he was crying because Prabhupada was so angry. So here's an example of a sannyasi who had to beg forgiveness from the Prabhupada. So no position, no matter how high it may be, can protect one from Kampara.
Yes, Jai Shri Prabhupada.
We may find that we have committed many offenses to many Vaishnavas unknowingly, and we may have committed for such a long time so many offenses. So not possibly not knowing who one has offended at different times, how can one try to become free from that kind of offense?
Yeah, at least in our heart we can always pray to the to all the Vaishnavas to forgive us of all the known and unknown offenses. And that will help us becoming free. And we can also broadcast openly that begging forgiveness from other Vaishnavas. Like, for instance, Prabhupada, before he left this planet, he actually begged forgiveness from all the Vaishnavas, all his godbrothers. And although they were not there, Prabhupada told the other godbrothers that please you tell everyone to forgive me. So he may not personally do that, one may not personally do that, but one can always ask everybody. Ask others to beg forgiveness on his behalf. And there is actually no question of senior and junior. Like Prabhupada even asked forgiveness from his sister. And I was there at that time. Prabhupada asked me to ask her for forgiveness. So then she was telling that there is no offense. Prabhupada never committed any offense to anyone. Then after she left, Prabhupada said, you see, she's a Vaishnavi. She's my God sister. She was initiated by Prabhupada. So although she was his younger sister, although she was in a woman's body, but still Prabhupada begged forgiveness. So there is no harm in begging forgiveness from the Vaishnavas. And that actually helps us make advancement. So instead, if we develop a very arrogant attitude, then that becomes very detrimental to our spiritual progress. Yes, Vasudev?
Prabhupada said that if one is simply a brahmachari, remains celibate his whole life, then 50% of his trip back home is already performed. But here it mentions that if a sannyasi is devoid of devotion to Vishnu, then he is considered to be more degraded than a dog eater. Could you explain?
Can you come?
Well, apparently, a sannyasi, even if he is devoid of devotion, he is in some kind of a spiritual standard and position. But here it contends that his position is lower than the lowest of men.
Which one are you talking about?
No, the third of things.
If a dog eater becomes a Vaishnava, then he becomes more elevated than a Brahmana. And if a sannyasi is devoid of devotion to Vishnu, then he is considered to be more degraded than a dog eater. Yeah, devotion, so there are Mayavadi sannyasis.
Still, we respect them, they are respected.
We respect them, but from a marginal consideration, his position is much lower than a Chandala, who is a devotee. Chandala would be Vijasrishtu. A Chandala even is bigger, higher, than more elevated than a Brahmana. Chandalopi Dijasrishta Hari Bhakti Parayana. If a Chandala becomes a devotee of Hari,
that's a special Chandala. But here we're talking of just any dog eater.
Well, a dog eater devotee. If a dog eater becomes a Vaishnava.
No, the second part. He is considered to be more degraded than a dog eater, any dog eater.
Yeah, the Nilkanth, yeah. Actually, a Mayavadi's position is worse than a dog eater. He is the lowest of mankind. Although apparently he may seem to be very advanced or very elevated. A Mayavadi is actually a demon.
What about a dog eater who is also a Mayavadi?
Well, right. Right. Good point. Very good point.
Yeah, because here we're not talking of Mayavadi.
Right.
This or that.
So the thing is, you see, because the Brahmin is more elevated and he is more, he should be a devotee. That's why when he doesn't become a devotee, his offense is greater than a person who is situated in a lower class but not a devotee.
Because he has an excuse.
Yeah, because he has an excuse.
He's just
right.
Low class.
But this person being so close to Krishna is averse to Krishna.
Wow.
So he is a greater offender.
That's the point.
Yes, Gaurmanga?
Just a couple of points, Maharaj. One was, when we spoke on point number two, the presence of a devotee at the time of death. Doesn't that refer to a pure devotee? That's my first point. The second one, when we're speaking about forgiveness, isn't forgiveness one of the topmost qualities of a devotee?
Yes. Yes. And wherever the expression devotee has been used, and generally it means pure devotee.
So because you spoke of devotees being assembled.
And Prabhupada said that everybody in this movement who is practicing the process that he has given is a pure devotee. Now, you see, like, we have to, the consideration is that whoever is practicing the process that Srila Prabhupada has given, he may not be fully pure right now, but by following the process, someday he will become pure. Right. So it's a green mango, and the difference between a green mango and a ripe mango. A green mango, as long as it's in the tree, someday it will become ripe. But unfortunately, if the green mango falls out of the tree, leaves ISKCON and goes away, then he'll just rot. He'll never become ripe. So as today the devotees may be green, but if they remain in the society, follow the instructions given by Srila Prabhupada, someday they will become pure devotees. And yes, the most wonderful qualities of a Vaishnava is his compassion and forgiveness. Actually, the most wonderful quality of a Vaishnava, the crest jewel of all Vaishnava qualities, is his humility. And in order to be forgiving, you have to be humble. Because I have seen, I'm sure everybody saw, like, sometimes out of our arrogance, we behave, we say that we are never going to forgive you. I'll never forgive you. Now that is not a very humble statement. That's a very arrogant statement. And a real Vaishnava, instead of thinking that he'll never forgive anybody, he thinks that he is himself is not even a Vaishnava, so the question of Vaishnava Apara doesn't even arise. Okay, so I'll stop now. Thank you all very much.